Hello and welcome to a podcast where we take fictional science from comics, movies, TV, etc. and try to make it factually, scientifically, possibly real. I'm Stoby.
I am known as Forgan.
And I'm Stu.
And this is The Science of Fiction.
Pick up the tricorder, put it on your head. Scanning the planet, see if anyone is dead. Autonomous car driving in Zanzibar. Beam me up, Scotty, I'm not that far. Android hoovering, tearing up the place. Flip phones and conference calls, friends in outer space. Astrophysicist sitting on my knee. Asking aliens if they like a cup of tea.
Fiction, do the science of fiction. I got an addiction to the science of fiction. I got an addiction, baby, to the science of fiction. I got an addiction to the science of fiction.
Hey folks, we are back for season 4 of The Science of Fiction. As you heard in our glorious intro, thanks Jason, I'm Stoby. As always, I'm joined by the brains and the brawn of the operation. First up, he's kept me grounded for over 20 years and is my favourite ogre of all time. It's Stu. Stu, how's it going?
I don't know if I can answer that legally.
Okay, okay. Moving on quickly then.
It's been a tough 6 months.
And he's the best-selling author of Solving Fermi's Paradox, the stand-in for Dr. Brian Cox, and our favourite astrologer, it's Professor Dr. Mr. Duncan Forgan. How's it going, Forgan?
Astrologer, I ask you, why did I come on this programme?
I didn't think that was the name of your book. I thought it was Fauci's Paradigm.
No, it's not that. Who's Fauci?
As Fauci.
As in the coronavirus medical advisor.
He's a guy who's currently stuck in a really paradigmic situation. Nobody will listen to him, despite the fact he's like the biggest expert in that whole thing. But we're getting away from the subject.
We are very much indeed. So, yeah.
So well, there's a good point, actually. What is the subject? Forgan, you came up with the idea for this season's theme. What is it?
Well, the theme I had was our favourite bad movies dissected. Then we had quite a big discovery in the news this week. Well, as we record it, yes, we did. Yeah. So there was a discovery by some old colleagues of mine, actually, people I used to work with, the discovery of phosphine in the atmosphere of Venus. Now, phosphine is a very interesting molecule because it's very difficult to produce by any other way except from life. So unless there's something about Venus's chemistry we don't understand, there's a good chance that there's life in the atmosphere of Venus. We have to go and explore it further. It's the best chance we've had yet to detect life on another planet. And that happened this week.
It's so funny because you told us and it's like aliens, basically. And I was like, oh, wow. That's that's game changing. Because before, like, we grew up, and obviously this is your research. This is what you spent a lot of your, you know, academic career working on, was... We grew up saying there must be life out there, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this week, it's like, there is life out there. It's
Let's be clear. They're not saying that, right? What they're saying is, here's this thing, phosphine, that on Earth generally is made by anaerobic bacteria. So that's bacteria that live without oxygen. Okay. And then we're seeing this in the atmosphere of Venus. And in fact, there was a paper earlier in the year saying, if we go and look at planets around other stars and we want to try and determine if they have life, one thing we should try and look for is phosphine. Because we have good reason to believe that if you see phosphine in the atmosphere of a planet like Earth,
it's maybe like a big fingerprint.
It's a fingerprint. It's called a biosignature.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that Venus is not like Earth, right?
No.
So Venus is a very different planet. It's about the same size. If we looked at the solar system from a great distance for the first time, Venus and Earth would look very similar in the first detection. But the minute we started to see anything about the atmosphere, you kind of go, okay, hang on. This has got a very thick carbon dioxide atmosphere. The surface temperature is, you know, 400 centigrade. There's lots of acid. There's acid rain onto the surface. And it's generally a hellish planet. And it's one of the reasons we've always thought, well, if there's going to be life, it's probably not going to be on Venus.
But isn't that the interesting thing? It's not that it's on the surface of Venus. It's in the atmosphere instead.
Yeah, so what's interesting is that there are parts of the atmosphere of Venus that have the right pressure and temperature for life like we see on Earth. And we see lots of life in the atmosphere of Earth as well. So stuff gets, you know, blown up in by the wind, and it kind of hovers in the atmosphere and in the stratosphere for a long time. So there's lots of bacteria floating around in the atmosphere. And so people were thinking for quite a long time, there's been papers from sort of the last, you know, 50 or 60 years talking about atmospheric life, life that lives in the atmospheres of planets. And here we go, we have this very strong detection of phosphine. And what's really interesting about it is that if you leave phosphine in that atmosphere by itself, it just reacts with stuff and disappears. So what that means is that there's something producing huge amounts of phosphine. And there's two options. Either it's life, like the life we see on Earth producing phosphine, or it's some new chemical process that we haven't come across yet because we don't know enough about Venus. So either way, it's really interesting. It's the best chance, the best thing we've seen yet to suggest life. And I think there's actually probes just on their way to Venus, just by happy accident. They're going to be there like reasonably soon. I think it's Bepi Colombo, I think is the name of the probe.
Bepi Colombo is a great name.
Yeah.
That is quality.
Bepi Colombo sounds like he's going to play for Inter Milan.
Well, I can't help but think of like the just one more thing, you know, like that kind of Colombo.
But Mexican.
Yeah.
Just as it's about to leave, just one more look.
Yeah, exactly. Thing. So they're hoping to try and actually, well, A, look at the atmosphere, and I think they're hoping to try and take a sample, right? So they can confirm if the phosphine detection is real, and, you know, who knows where we go from there. But it's really exciting. It's like a brand new lead in the search for life, and that happened this week.
I just love the way you explain these things.
So I'm here, I guess.
Yeah. Pretty much the major crutch of this entire thing.
Kind of. So because this amazing thing happened this week, instead of going for my original plan, which was to find our favorite bad films and sort of critique the science behind them, we went for a film that was kind of relevant to the story. And so so Stobie, you picked a film.
Yeah, I picked it's almost like a favorite not bad film.
Yeah.
So I jokingly suggested we should do Aliens this week, and the guys were like, yes, we should. I was like, oh, okay, I'll watch that.
It's one of those weird things where someone makes a suggestion and both people agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often to me. Yeah.
This doesn't normally happen. Usually I get told no and go back into the cupboard.
Bad Stobie. Sit down.
No, you cannot have cookies for breakfast. Oh.
So this was on, was it Tuesday? And I realized on Wednesday that the only version of Aliens I've got is the director's cut. So I had 2.5 hours. Of film to get through with very, very little time. However,
I know how you do that.
Play speed. Yeah, 1.4.
You have a history, yeah. Everyone sounds a bit squeaky.
I done it for Man of Steel, wasn't it?
You've done it for a lot of movies. I've listened to a lot of movie reviews from you, and you said, oh, it was all very squeaky.
The action was too fast.
It was too fast. I couldn't hear them. I couldn't even speak.
Terrible movie. Everything goes so fast.
When they got shot, it was just, and they were done. You know, so we're going to look at Aliens. Forgan, did you watch it?
I did, yes. It's been a while since I've seen it, but yeah. So
I watched about 3/5 of it before my DVD died. I tried it on like every DVD player in my house, and it gets to the point where they're making the decision to leave and nuke from orbit, and it just stops, and I got very annoyed because I was like, "Oh, I think I've only ever really used the DVD like once, and it's clearly borked."
So what happens next to it is they nuke the planet from orbit, and then the film ends.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which would have been the sensible thing to do.
I'm quite surprised that takes an hour.
It's just 40 minutes of chat afterwards.
So
this was a big explosion.
Because of the ways I decided I would actually take notes and actually put some effort in. As most people know, I wing this quite heavily. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to take notes as I go. I'm even going to write things down. So things I notice and things I want to ask questions about. But one of the things I do point out, is greed and ambition still seem to outweigh logic and common sense in the future.
that's probably quite accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because this is one of the things we were maybe talking about doing in a future episode is how accurate a future we get in the movies to what has actually happened. Because obviously a lot of these movies came out in the 80s where they didn't know what the future was going to be like. And in like the course of 20, 30 years, obviously we're now further into the future. In some cases, we've reached the future from those movies. And I want to know who got it right, who got it wrong, who was way off. And this has nothing to do with wanting a hoverboard.
So when was this film set?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Ooh, come on, don't trip us up.
The movie was released in 1986.
Yes, but what was the...
It's 57 years after the first one.
Okay.
Because she's been in hypersleep for 57 years.
21-22.
Right, okay. So it's about 100 years into the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, because this was one of the things I picked up, because they make a mention of the fact that she's been in hypersleep at the start for like 57 years, which apparently is, and I say this in quotation marks, unusually long. This leads to various questions in terms of like the whole suspended animation hypersleep, how that all works.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, shall we go into it?
I mean, we may as well start because we're 10 minutes in already and... It's looking like we're going to have two episodes here.
Yeah.
You're really pushing for this double episode, aren't you?
Yeah, Stu's notes are extensive.
Some of them are just observations, which we'll move on from very quickly.
Yes, that's true. I did feel like I was about to sit an exam coming on this podcast.
The questions I shared yesterday, a lot of them were, it was me, Kev, and Cheen. So I'm just putting the credit out there now because I might forget later.
Don't give them credit.
So, because that was one of my first questions from the actual film as well, was the fact that it had been 57 years of hypersleep. I mean, can you survive that mentally and physically?
Well, I had a bit of reading about this, and there are people trying to figure out how to get humans to hibernate, which is slightly different, right? Because hibernation is more like, okay, it's the winter, let's just kind of, you know, close up shop until spring comes along. So it's like
shove something up our butt to stop us pooping. That's how bears do it.
I'm not sure that humans will do it the same way as bears if they can do it at all. I think that's the first lesson I learned from my reading.
Oh, you mean we're not allowed to go and sit in a cave?
So, well, I had to look at this because people are very interested in it for a couple of reasons. One is that they've discovered that some of the things that happen when animals hibernate is good for things like healing from trauma and from injuries. And they've discovered that the same kind of effects are also true in humans. So if you're a person, right, sitting watching aliens, you're still producing quite a lot of heat, right? We're warm-blooded. So a lot of the body's energy is put into just keeping you warm. And so you have this kind of base rate of like energy consumption, you know, even if you're just sitting doing nothing. And that metabolism, that rate, will also affect, you know, just basically all your body's functions. So cell repair and digestion and, you know, all the other things that happen as part of your background processes that keep you alive. And what has been discovered in the last sort of 10 years is that you can actually help people who are in serious trouble if they've had an accident or an injury by cooling them down. Keeping them cool actually helps to slow down some of these functions. And it means that the doctors get bought a little bit of extra time to help repair the damage, which I thought was really interesting. And it's the same kind of process that hibernation is. Hibernation involves reducing your body temperature.
Isn't that essentially why some people get put into comas and stuff?
A bit, yeah. So it's the same kind of deal that by putting you into a coma, you're basically reducing the body's commitments to, you know, being conscious and having the brain like generating huge amounts of energy. Because I think, was it 20% of... the calories you burn are in the brain or the brain.
I would imagine that.
So obviously going into a coma helps kind of reduce the load on your brain and on your body. But yeah, it's a similar kind of deal. So people are being rapidly cooled when they're in, you know, serious problems. Or I was reading an article about, I think it was a cardiac surgeon who regularly, if there's a problem with the aorta, for example, when you're doing heart surgery, what generally has to happen is that the chest has to get cut open and the surgeon has to go and stick his hand in and basically pump the aorta manually to keep the patient going.
God, that seems like really awkward.
Yeah. I mean, you're in pretty dire straits.
Some intern is going,
it's almost, it's like three quarters of a Mortal Kombat fatality, isn't it?
Pretty much. You've done everything but pull it out, right?
Yeah.
So you've got this guy, you know, squeezing the aorta to keep the patient going, but that only buys you so many minutes. Like, if you can't fix the problem within 3 or 4 minutes, the patient still dies. But if the patient is cooled, that time increases to, I think it was nearly 10 minutes, right? So there's advantages to cooling down the body and using some of the techniques that animals use to hibernate. So this is why people are thinking, well, maybe we can actually just go the whole way, and rather than just cooling the human down, can we put them into a state of hibernation?
So this is the other thing I noticed from the in the movie, is that the pods themselves, they freeze over.
Mm.
Now, and this is, again, this is very much dealing into this, because they don't really explain it and they don't really go into a huge amount as to what, how it is. It's that whole sort of just show, not tell. But like everything, they seem to indicate that everything freezes. And then when they come out, they're just ready to go. Like, they're a bit tired. And again, it's a weakness and disorientation because of the unusually long one at the start. So it doesn't look like they slow anything down. It looks like they seem to freeze it. But then I noticed something else, which I thought, I think it's supposed to be funny, but then it just triggered something in my head. When Apon, who is the sergeant, wakes up, literally within about 3 seconds of being awoken, he has a cigar in his mouth. Now,
I love that.
This just raises, obviously, there's a bit of a giggle, oh, he's got a cigar straight in his mouth. But this raises questions, because if the body's been frozen, as it seems to indicate, because of the way the chambers are freeze up, how does the cigar survive? Now, either it would be soggy because it's just thawed out, or really cold.
So
it was sitting just outside.
Yeah, was the cigar in the pod with him?
I think it was, because it's 3 seconds and it's just in his mouth.
Is he just like, is he gone to hypersleep with the cigar in his mouth? Like,
no, it's not in his mouth. I think it's in his hand, or just inside where his hand can reach.
And just like sticks it in his mouth and goes.
And that's the other thing. They don't actually like, and again, it's the whole like show don't tell. They never actually say how long they're in hypersleep between going from Earth to the planet. So yeah, you don't actually know how long they're in there.
It's really unclear to me, like, where this well, it, I think it's apparently, it's a moon. Is that right? Am I right in saying it's a moon?
Something like that. It's very inhospitable when they get there. Like it's, but it has a breathable atmosphere because everyone who goes outside doesn't have any like, but it's like, storm and there's like a lightning storm and it's not like, it's not luscious. It's just rocks and stuff.
Right. So yeah, like where is it? Like how long were they in hypersleep? Because they were in hypersleep in the first film as well, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd like to know that. I'm sure there's some aliens in there who can
probably
screaming at their podcast. You should know this.
Yeah. The last sort of thing that came up with me, and this is sort of slightly covers another topic, but when they're coming out, Bishop's also been in hypersleep. Mm. Now, Bishop is the synthesoid.
Is that a word?
Yeah, I think so. He's a synth. Synthesoid. It's like an android synthesoid. I'm glad you all find this so funny. I actually paid attention.
Okay. I think I maybe had like a fairly large glass of wine while I was watching this film. Sorry.
God, you guys are so unprofessional.
Hey, I've got water here. I'm professional just now.
But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is they openly have him on board. Well, they're not hiding the fact that he is a synthesoid, because they all know he's a synthesoid. The only person who doesn't realize it is Winona Ryder. Not Winona Ryder. What's her name?
Sigourney Weaver.
Wrong film.
Very wrong film.
She's the only one who doesn't realize. If he's an android, why does he need to be in hypersleep?
That's a very good question.
And would that not mess with his system if he's being frozen and he's not a... is not a real thing.
So is he organic?
I never really worked that out.
Because when the artificial things get like hurt,
it's
or
white
killed,
blood.
There's lots of like goop that comes out, isn't there?
Yeah. I'm pretty certain at one point, like in the first movie, Ian Holm's head is still talking when it's been taken off. But I can't remember if there's like bits and pieces hanging out of it, and if it's like organic or something else.
I mean, you'd assume if it's organic that if you severed the head, that would be it.
Yeah, but it still works.
Yes.
Still functions. And even, I think even in the later ones, I think, I don't remember his name, Irish Magneto.
Irish Michael Magneto. Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender. Irish Magneto. He is Irish Magneto. Sorry to go on a rant here, but it, throughout the entire movies that he is Magneto, he has an Irish accent throughout the entire thing. There is a point in X-Men First Class where he does a big speech and he's just talking with an Irish accent. He may as well be Colin Farrell.
Just got an image of like a leprechaun bending metal.
Anyway, my point is like in I'm pretty certain there's points in the movies where he's in where his head's also been disconnected, but he's still functioning.
Yeah. I don't know what the sort of the idea behind the artificial people is, but I'm guessing that they must be like temperature proof. But I don't really get why they care, right? I mean, do they eat?
No, I don't think they do. When he's introduced at the start, he just offers his food to everyone else.
Mm.
But he does the weird knife thing as well.
Oh, he does. Yeah, that's right.
And he misses.
Yeah,
and Bill Paxton.
He hits himself slightly, just so they can show that he's a synth.
Mm. Yeah. So, because that's one of the other reasons why people are interested in hibernation or hypersleep, whatever you want to call it, is that if you're doing these, if you're wanting to send people in on long space missions, then they need to eat food and they want to walk around and breathe air, and you're having to take a lot of stuff with you. But if they go into hibernation, then maybe they eat less.
Yeah, well, they would, wouldn't they? So again, I'm sorry, and again, other observation here. When they all come out of the chambers on the ship, and all the soldiers are waking up and all that, I would have thought there'd be more things on them, like more sensors and tubes. But
yeah,
like literally every single one of them. They're just in their pants and their vest, and or topless, and they've got like four little like heart monitor pads on their pecs, and then down on their abs for some reason for their ab readings. but there's nothing else. There's nothing else. There's no like nothing
future
going into
medical technology.
Well, see that this is another observation I make, but we'll get to that.
It's an omni sensor.
Yeah, but again, if you're talking like if they're being literally frozen and they just stop existing in time, which is more of a quantum thing, then yeah, that makes sense. But if they're just being frozen and essentially asleep, still needs to go in and out.
Yes. That's so they a need very to have, big they, continuity.
They need to have, a tube that goes in, and they need to have a tube to take the stuff back out again.
Yeah.
So my question is where's the tube that takes everything out?
That's a good question. And I think there's a problem there because there's two things. There's two reasons why we can't just hibernate naturally, and even why we find it difficult to hibernate with technology.
Because we produce waste.
Because we eat and we poop, right? And you need to do something about it.
I find it hard to even sleep one night.
Do you have something you want to share?
He has an irregular system.
Have you reached that age? We have to get up to pee. Yeah, it's that time of your life, isn't it? When you can't sleep a whole night without having to go for a pee. I'm not quite there yet, but. what was I saying? Yeah, so humans need to pee and poop, right? And there was no evidence of any kind of waste evacuation system in there at all. So, yeah, that pod's going to fill up with effluents
They're not going to have very nice-looking pants when they come out at the end.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, you've been in hypersleep for 57 years and you've messed yourself 100,000 times. Well done.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I totally appreciate the fact that they do a really good job of pointing out the sheer monotony of space travel. Mm. Like I imagine, like going on a trip like that would be seriously dull. And if you look at other movies like Moon and things like that, when you're like isolated in space and people start to go a little bit twitchy, you can totally understand why going into hypersleep would be the most sensible thing to do. But you'd think they'd maybe put some more things on them than just four little things on their chests and a magic cigar.
I like that idea of them going in and somebody's saying there, a guy's like, do you not think we should put a tube in? Ah, they'll be fine. It's all right.
It's fine.
It's just a quick hop to LV-426. They'll be all right. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, you remembered the name of the movie. This planet, I couldn't.
Yeah.
It was when they get to the other end and it's not a frosting over the top, it's just brown. Turbulence.
All of the crew drowned. How? We don't want to know. Don't open it. Don't open it.
Maybe that's how they power the spacecraft. They just use like effluents and just like chuck it in the.
Yeah, someone but they come in, open the pod. Sign of it. They come out and, absolutely like, clean.
Dig it out. Yeah,
just that's true. Drenched in shit.
Yes. So, yeah. So first of all, those pods would be very shitty. Mm. The second problem is that humans, it's very difficult to lower our temperatures. The human body doesn't like having a low temperature. It reacts.
No, not without killing it.
So one of the things that we do when our temperature starts to drop is we shiver, right? And that's a response to try and get your body moving to generate the heat you need to stay warm. So whenever you try and reduce a human's body temperature in the lab, the body's constantly fighting back saying, no, I want to be this warm, please. Stop trying to give me hypothermia. So that's your two problems with suspended animation, hibernation, whatever you want to call it. First of all, humans like to be warm and their bodies don't cope well with being chilled. And two, they need to eat and shit.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. They all come out and they're all in like prime physical specimens. They're all like really muscular. Wouldn't they have just atrophied to shit?
Yes. Oh, that's another point too, is that, yeah, generally when bears hibernate, for example, it's not just like, oh, I'm going to go to sleep now. I'm not going to move for 3 months. They actually have a cycle of sort of being inactive and then being a bit more active and kind of moving their body around a bit and turning over and then going back into that state. So you'd have to have some kind of system in place where you went to sleep and something was basically making you move. So I don't know if it was, you know, either it's electrical impulses making your muscles kind of contract, or if it's just like a robot who, you know, like those robots you see that fold clothes. I have that picture of like them just like folding a person and going, right, okay, there you go. Boop, 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 boop. Arms out, arms in.
People origami.
People origami, exactly. Turn them over, boom. It's like, okay, you're a beautiful swan now. I'll leave you for the next 10 years and come back in a bit, you know.
Turn you into a table.
Look, it's a crane. Oh, wait, I broke her neck. Oh, dear.
Oh, no. Oops. You're not getting begging for that anytime soon.
Yeah, so that's the two problems. That's the issues that prevent us from doing it right now, is figuring out the chilling problem and the food, like the sustenance problem, and that maintaining the muscle mass.
Hmm.
The other thing I'm just thinking, though, is like you're saying, you know, they're looking at hibernation techniques for humans, but isn't that just like sleeping half your life away? Because you would still age, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, some of your biological processes might slow down. So
I have
you might not. So if you were in hibernation for 20 years, your body's aging, quote unquote, at the sort of the DNA level, at the telomeric level.
I can almost talk about this.
Would be a little bit less than that, but like, who knows? No one's ever done this before, so it's not like we could say, "Well, yeah, you slept for 20 years and you've only aged 10." You know,
depends how the process would affect the mitochondria.
Yes, exactly.
So depending on the mitochondrial effect, deterioration over that time. So if the body's frozen or in suspension, and that slows the decay of the mitochondria, or the then it's quite possible that you would slow your aging as well.
Yeah.
There you go. No one expected that to come out of me, did it?
Yeah. No, when it gets to DNA, you hold your own.
Yeah, in my body.
Whoa, nice. That was a legit science joke.
Yeah, yeah. Being married to someone who knows about that is useful.
Going back to the bit you were talking about earlier, Stu, when they were all having like their food and that, did anyone else notice that when Ripley wanted coffee and she said to Burke she couldn't find milk, he said to her, in space, no one can. Here, use cream.
I think that silence is absolutely appropriate. I knew that joke was coming as well, and I was like, I'm not giving it to you.
Now, when you said that you were writing an intro for this episode before we started recording, was that what you were actually writing?
No.
That was,
if you look at the picture of the notes, that bit that he's blocked out is the bad joke.
Oh.
Which is why he got so upset.
Serious question, though. The first question that really pops into most people's heads when you mention aliens, the first thing they think of is the acid for blood.
Mm.
So you've got the alien blood, you know, like it's melting through steel or whatever, it's melting people.
Everything. It melts everything. Yeah,
so what must their bodies, and particularly their veins, be made of that could contain this and give them the fluid movements that they, you know, they clearly have? They're very agile, they're very fast.
It's interesting, isn't it? There is an equivalent. You know, we have like quite concentrated acid in our bodies as well. We have them in the stomach, right? Now, I don't think if you spilled out stomach acid, it would melt through steel, but...
No. Well, that's a question I'm going to come to in a second.
So what the human body does is that the stomach lining is basically continually replenished with this kind of mucusy layer. So the acid can essentially attack the mucus. And by the time it's done attacking that, some more mucus has shown up. So that is our way of protecting ourselves from like the acid contained in our bodies. And if you have an issue with producing that mucus, then your stomach lining starts to get eaten by the acid and it can be extremely painful and can cause all kinds of conditions. So presumably what's happening in the aliens' bodies is something similar, right? That they have some kind of mucus that coats the insides of their veins. That means that the acid can pass through it, attack the mucus without attacking the rest of the body.
So my question is, just how powerful an acid is, does it have to be able to eat through anything as quickly as it does? Because like you're talking like instant touch and it starts to melt.
Right. Well, the problem here is you have the wrong Dr. Forgan on this podcast, right?
Okay. Well, I mean, just give your brother a call.
Yes.
Text message.
So my brother, the professor of chemistry, would be able to tell you better about acids. But what I can tell you is a little bit I read about last night, and it's about what they call super acids. So there are certain types of acid that are just extremely good at corroding things. And some of the worst super acids are so powerful that generally when an acid attacks a substance, some of the acid is converted into something else as this is going on. So there's less and less acid attacking the surface as time goes on. With super acids, that basically doesn't happen. So the acid attacks the surface, starts corroding it, and it doesn't run out. It just keeps going, right? So that's why you see certain acids being able to melt all the way through like very thick layers of steel. So whatever is inside the alien's blood is a super acid.
Ooh.
And I was reading about what kinds of things could be in there. I think it was, now don't quote me on this. And you know, Ross, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Get Ross on, get a quote from him.
Maybe we should try and get him on for an episode. That'd be quite funny.
Yeah, I can ask him about alien blood.
He's also a tired dad, so it would fit the kind of the routine.
Yeah, it fits the genre.
Yeah, it fits the genre quite nicely. Is it antimony hydrochloride? I'd have to go and look it up again. But antimony is one of the elements that you find in these super acids. So that was some of the things
I didn't realize it was divorced.
Yeah.
I'm putting in another sound effect. Yeah. So if it's a super acid, then could the mucus production, if that is the theory we're going with, could that still work?
Yeah, it would just have to be very quick, right? As soon as the super acid had melted through the mucus, something else would have to come through. So there'd be a continuous flow of mucus around the body at the same rate as the acid to make sure that that wasn't getting through the skin and out of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult movie and it just dissolves into a mush. Oh my God, it's an alien. Oh, it's just falling apart. Oh, that's
never mind.
That's not particularly threatening at all.
So,
oh no, it's going through the floor. Oh no, we're on a ship.
So what happens if like the alien like stubs its toe or bumps its nose and has a wee bleed? Does that mean that it just like dissolves?
Has a wee bleed.
Imagine if it bumps as well.
I imagine if it bumps its nose, it's going to get a bruise rather than a wee bleed.
I guess.
But yeah. I get what you're saying. Like if it's, you know, chopping onions and it slices a finger off, then, you know, oops, Sorry, guys.
It's ruined dinner.
I'm dead.
I'll just step outside. You need a new kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't quite get how that works. There you go. One thing I did read about it, which is quite interesting, is that if the alien's body has acid for blood, then that's also essentially an alien that has the same operating principles as a battery. That batteries use acid in the same way.
Do you mean it could like power a car?
Well, in the sense that the power source for the aliens is their blood, right?
Hmm.
Which is really weird because that's not our power source, right? Our power source involves reactions with oxygen, whereas there's just like, yeah, I've got electrons flowing all around my body because my blood is made of acid and it shunts electrons everywhere. And there you go. That's it. It wouldn't need to eat food in the same way that we did. The reason it would have to eat food, I guess, is to make sure that its mucus supply was replenished.
But I don't think you ever, I don't think there's any point in the movies where you see it actually eat. It just kills stuff over and over and over again.
So it kills stuff and it uses other bodies to reproduce.
Yeah. Like it does the whole, yeah, it does the host reproduction thing. And then, the other thing is like, it goes from being the chest burster to the big one quite quickly, if I remember from the first movie. Like the growth spurt it goes through once it's actually sort of finished gestating, is pretty swift. But like, you don't know if it's just gone off and gone like, oh, I'm really hungry, I'm going to eat. Like, where does it get? Like, is it just producing lots of acid that it just sort of grows really fast?
Yeah,
it's like shaving foam. It just comes in contact with oxygen and boom.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they eat? Have they never been shown to eat on screen? Have they?
I don't know. I didn't watch the first one until recently.
Because their initial energy source is the person that they're gestating in.
Yeah.
And then they kind of scootle out of the room.
Scootle.
I mean, it's ugly, but it's also kind of cute in a funny way. I can't watch it now without thinking of like Red Dwarf and the Polymorph.
Yeah. Like that is one of the things. Like I was watching it. And here's a fun fact. Captain Hollister is in the movie. The guy on the planet, who's running the planet, you know, where he's talking about, hey, every time I get, he's asked about the claims, and he's like, every time I go back to the thing, it takes 6 months to send a message back asking, what's the story? And then it's like, and they say, don't ask. That's Captain Hollister, Mac McDonald. Yeah. There you go.
And like Red Dwarf was clearly very much inspired by Alien.
Oh, yeah, it's all ductwork.
Like, when you look at like the way the spaceship's built, that's clearly the picture they had in their heads. And I can't watch that scene in Alien now without thinking of the polymorph in that early bit, just going kind of running around the floor.
So speaking of the spaceship, right? I have a question about the spaceship because you see it obviously flying off to this planet several times, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of stuff on the front. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any sense as to why it's there. It's like, I think my description, I said, it looks like a gun that's had several butter knives and chopsticks strapped to it. Mm-hmm. What is the deal with the pointy bits on the front? Now, in space, I don't imagine there's a huge amount of friction. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you need it to be pointy to go faster.
No. I guess the technical term is that it makes it look bitchin'.
Yeah, I mean, there is an aspect of Pimp My Ride to it.
But I don't think it has any other purpose.
Bitchinosity is definitely something.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess it's meant to be like, it's a military spaceship. And, you know, can you imagine like a general sitting in a room with a designer saying, okay, I'm going to build you a spaceship. And the general's like, well, it's space, right? You can make it any shape you want. And he's like, well, yeah, technically. And he's like, all right, I want a gun. And can put some knives and stuff on it as well, and like, you know, make it look like really sharp and like a big, like massive weapon, you know. And then
the designer actually at that point goes, "Why?"
Well, the designer's like, "Why not? You pay my salary. I'll build you a spaceship. It's like a massive weapon.
You're on a military contract."
Yeah, exactly. Like you make massive weapons for massive weapons. That's your military contract, right?
Speaking of massive weapons, I'm loving the wee segues I'm getting tonight. This is great.
Are we about to talk about your penis again?
The final showdown with the cargo loader versus the alien queen, and they end up in the airlock, and Ripley's on the ladder, and then she opens up the airlock, and eventually the alien gets pulled out into space. Mm-hmm. Would the force that's creating that vacuum effect, Would Ripley be strong enough to be able to fight against that and pull herself up a ladder?
Now, I'm trying to remember what happens at that point. She's not in the, like, exosuit thing at that point, is she?
No, she's just on her... Yeah. She's just in her clothes with one shoe on.
Mm. Weird piece of information.
That's because the alien pulls off the other shoe.
Oh, okay. Still that's a weird piece of information.
That's how it falls.
So, I'm not entirely clear. I haven't done the calculations, but I'm not sure what the wind speed would be. My feeling is that, yeah, she probably would be able to hold on. Like, it's quite a good ladder rung, right? She's got a full grip around mm-hmm. it. Yeah,
I was just curious. I also had a good giggle at Bishop sliding across the floor at that point, too.
Well, I think we're going to have to stop there for this episode.
No, can't we keep going more?
I'm sure we will go more next time.
Oh.
So let's sign off. Stu, where can we find you online?
Why do you guys always come to me first?
Because it's funny.
I don't want to be found online. You can go to episode 2 when episode 2 comes around and you can get my Twitter handle then.
Is this your game, just to make people listen to other episodes?
Exactly.
So they can find out your Twitter handle.
It's like the worst cliffhanger ever.
It's an audio treasure hunt.
Yeah, the weirdest Easter egg hunt ever. Yeah, if you want to find out what my Twitter handle is, listen to episode 2, where you get the second half of this episode, which is going to be amazing because we're going to cut somewhere in the middle of the nonsense, and then Forgan's going to have to stitch it all together like a weird Frankenstein of podcasts.
I won't. I'm not editing it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Stoby's going to have to do it like a podcast. I've already forgotten what we were doing.
I'm glad to or see where you pay attention.
On Twitter. Yeah, I don't know where I am on Twitter. Yeah, no. I'm at DH4GAN with a 4 in the middle.
Is that the game we're playing, is it?
Yeah. And you can find me at Bark the Ogre. Stoby, where can we find you?
I'm going to be boring then. You can find me at Site of Fi Podcast for that, or you can.
That's not your name.
No, it's not. You can find me at. But you guys have switched names already, so I just had to switch with the group account. And the group account's going. I'm at D Stoby, but no one's listening.
I didn't realize the group account was a nerd, but okay.
This is why I'm not allowed to do intros and outros.
I mean, you can also find us at fcpod.net/thescienceoffiction.
Nice. Well, it's been fun talking to you chaps, and we'll see you next time for part 2 of this monster episode.
Oh, I see what you did there.
You did, thank God.
Yeah.
That's why I laughed.
Right, please, Jason, play the music.
Aliens are monsters, and it's a monster of an episode.